Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shout at the Oval podcast, and it is the first episode in quite some time. As I discussed on the last episode of the podcast, I took a bit of a prolonged absence due to the birth of my daughter. She's now 8 weeks old, doing great. I've been able to sort of get a bit of a routine, and I was ready to get back behind the mic. So did enjoy my time off, but I was itching to get back, and I'm delighted to be here and able to bring you more podcasts about Glentoran. Just a quick mention, the Castlereagh Glentoran Supporters Club, who are of course proud sponsors of this podcast. I'm delighted to have them support the podcast, and it just works out really well for both of us. They are showing the match next week. If you can't get a ticket or you can't make it for any reason, the Castlereagh Club are showing the match. As well as that, they are running a bus to and from the match, so if you want to go to the club and have a few drinks, maybe you live nearby, you can jump on the bus, but you'll need to pre-book. You need to contact them and pre-book. There's only about 10 seats left on that. And I'm sure that if the Glens manage to get the win, there'll be some crack in the club afterwards. But if not, you're more than welcome back to join your sorrows. On to this week's podcast. But I suppose before we get there, we should address the elephant in the room. It is, of course, all changed since the last time we were speaking. Warren Feeney is no longer Glentoran manager, and instead at the club we have Declan Devine on a temporary basis. Why it's temporary, we don't know. We don't know whether it's so they can carry out a proper recruitment process, whether he's going to take the reins, should he prove himself, or maybe they've got someone lined up. Who knows? The thing that is that matters the most right now is that Declan Devine is the new manager of Glentoran for however long that may be, and we should definitely throw our support behind him and the players for this end of the season, because obviously we have the semi-final coming up next week, but we have the playoffs if we don't manage to win the Irish Cup. So we could end up being the highest placed team going into them playoffs, which would technically on paper make you the best team, so you would imagine the Glens would be favourites for them. So hopefully we can get through them without any distractions should we need to do so. So we wish Decky and all his backroom staff, not too sure who the backroom staff will be, but I wish them all the best of luck for the rest of the season, and I'm sure everyone who is tuning into this podcast will do the same. This week's guest is a player, former player, now Academy Head of Player Development, I think is his job title. At the Oval, it is Andy Matheson. He played 288 times for the Glens for his boyhood club and scored 41 goals. He won 10 winners medals, and he played a pivotal role in one of those title wins at the Oval. He was an absolute delight to talk to, because not only does he have that experience of growing up supporting Glentoran and then going on and playing for the club that he loved. He started off his career at Manchester United, where he spent 3 years, and then he now has this role at the Glens, developing or helping develop not just the young players but the academy setup in general. And I was really interested to talk to him about that, to talk to him about the facilities. He invited me down to Ashfield to record the podcast, so we got to have a wee bit of a look around. They got to see the players training, got to meet some of the coaches, got to see the new change, even the change in facilities. I went to Ashfield, I left 14 years ago, and I can tell you it's very different down there with this partnership they have with Glentoran compared to when I was there. There's 18 to 20 boys doing their A levels, I believe it is. They're doing, you can get 3 A levels plus their training on a full time basis. It's a so much of a far cry away from when I was younger, that if you wanted to go and play for Glentoran Academy, you went and trained on a Sunday in King George. It was parents taking the training, it was bumpy pitches, it just wasn't great. Now the opportunity these kids are being given is just fantastic, and it's not just to get them across the water, but it's to develop them for the Glentoran first team. And me and Andy discussed that, and I was really interested to hear what he said on that, because I'm always a big advocate, and I've mentioned it before on the likes of this podcast, that players who get about 100 senior games in the Irish League under their belt before making the move across are the players who do the best. So it's really interesting to hear Andy's take on that. It's also interesting to hear about the potential breakaway league that the Glens are setting up with the other Belfast clubs, and we discussed that in a bit of detail, which might take place next season, as early as next season. So it was just interesting to discuss all these things about not just Andy's playing career, but also the role that he is he's undergoing at the Oval. There might be a lot of negativity surrounding the Glens this year, But there's one thing that we should be proud of, and it is that academy, and it is some of the work that's going on down there. So my hats off to Andy, to all the team there, who are making it a really, really professional setup, which I think is the key word here. This isn't like old days, and as I say, these kids will have amazing opportunities. So that's enough for me. I will let you get on to this week's podcast, and here it is. It is the Shout at the Oval podcast with Andy Matheson. Andy, welcome to the Shout at the Oval podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on. I really appreciate you coming on and being a guest.
Cheers, Matthew. Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
I have to say, there's not too many people I've had on the podcast who have played for Manchester United, but you have. You obviously started off as a young player there. How did that move to Man United come about?
Obviously, it was back and forward when I was a kid, from maybe I was 12 or 13. I used to go over every sort of holiday period until I got to a certain age where they had to make this sign for apprenticeship at 16. So signed at 16. Got through out at 18 because obviously wasn't up to the standard of what they were looking.
Did they just pick you up when you were playing for your youth team at the time? Or?
Yeah, Bob Bishop, when I was playing for Clarnhill, myself and Big Windy, went over on trials along with a few players from here ourselves. Big Mark Snodden from Thomas Dundella was over on trial as well, and I got invited back more so than the other boys, and I was back and forward, right and regular, Halloween, Christmas, Easter, when things like that, Durban, and got a wee break. And when I came 14, 15, I was flying over probably twice a month to play matches for them on Saturday morning. So I was flying out Friday night and coming back on Saturday night after the game. So I was pretty young, probably wouldn't be allowed to do that nowadays with health and safety and stuff like that and child protection stuff.
What was it like moving away from home at such a young age? And was it the case if you were over there, were you over there for a long period of time? Did you spend basically the whole time there, or was it just flying back and forth?
When we were over for the holidays, there was a lot of boys from Scotland, obviously England, Wales, down south and up here as well. We all stayed in the halls of residence in Salford. And probably got some 15, 20 boys there. So it was good. And then when I signed, I was in digs with boys, three from down south actually. One from Wales and one from England. So we all had a good bit of crack together, so it helped settle in.
Did any of those players go on and make it big? Any big names?
Well, the ones from down south was a fella called Derek Swan, came back home and played a wee bit for the clubs down south. Pat Kells, he had a really retire with a bad back. Martin Russell, you probably heard of Martin Russell, who played a bit for Portadown, played for Middlesbrough, played for Leicester. And then the other main one was probably Clayton Blackmore, who I dig with for a lot of years.
You spent 3 years at United, and unfortunately it wasn't to be for you to sort of make it as a full-time footballer over there, but do you remember that conversation? Was it difficult at the time?
Yeah, well, you sort of get the feeling over the last lot of months. There was probably quite a few of us, maybe 8 or 10 of us got released that summer. And we did win the league, the A-team league, so all the top teams from City, Liverpool, Aberdeen were all playing it, and we could beat in the final of the Lancashire Cup. But it comes to the time, and they have to be hard decisions made, and of course Big Ron Atkinson's good at making decisions, and he brings you into the office 1v1 and just tells you you're not up to it for next season on, and for a play they try and find you a club. So after that,
do you think you having that experience has maybe helped in the role that you're doing now?
Yeah, it does. Obviously, with my age at the time, I was 18, I was okay. But sometimes when we were talking to kids now, we need to have a parent with them if we're 16 or 17, if we're saying, tell them we're letting them go. Because we think at the minute, they're probably not going to break into the next team above them. So it's hard on the kids. It's a hard decision for the coaches to make as well also, because we get attached to the kids. But
You signed then for Glentoran in 1985, and playing for Man United is obviously huge, but Glentoran were your club, that was your boyhood club.
Yeah, I was playing Cornhill in the boys club. I ended up going to Dungoyne for the last year because Cornhill stopped at 14s, and then Dungoyne had another team, so I went there for a year, but I also came to Glentoran and played in the youth team at Glentoran with a lot of good young players, young Robert Craig, God bless him.
He's actually 8 years passed away this week.
What a character and what a player and what a fella he was. A great kid. You know, same age as me, so he was. He had a lot of potential. He went to a couple of English clubs on trial as well and probably could have done well over there, but he got that wee bit of luck just at the time when he was over. But yeah, come back 85 and that was it.
Do you remember breaking into the first team, sort of making your debut and what that felt like? Do you remember your actual debut? A lot of people suppose do remember their debuts.
I'm going to say, was it Cliftonville?
It was before my time, I can tell you that much, so I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. And I was doing research and I couldn't find anything. You're a hard man to research.
I think it was Cliftonville, because I think Cliftonville was my first game. I think my first goal was against Cliftonville, and then my last game was obviously against Cliftonville when I got my leg broke. So I just vaguely remembered that's who it was.
Do you get that sort of heads up beforehand? I remember talking to John Devine about this when he was in the podcast, and he sort of made a arc rise. He went quite quickly. Did you sort of ease yourself in, or was it right you were getting
I come
in?
Back. When I come back, I think it was November when I come back from Manchester, and I played a lot of games in the reserve team. And I think seeing the boys were coming back, boys came back from England or Scotland, they always look sharper than the boys over here because they're coming back from full-time training. And I thought I was doing really, really well in the reserves when I was only 18, coming 19. And I was wondering why I wasn't getting a chance. But then I'm looking back now. You had Cleary's, you had Morrison's, you had Bars. How was I meant to get on that team? You know? But patience paid off and I got a few games.
A lot of people say that. A lot of people say it's you had to compete in one of the greatest midfields that Glentoran has seen, certainly for a couple of generations. It was very, very difficult to get into, especially like Nuts was on fire back then. Many people would have him in their sort of top five all-time players for Glentoran.
Oh, I was lucky enough and privileged to play with a lot of good players. But for me, and I'll have to say it, wee Nuts was my best Glentoran player ever.
See, in those initial years that you spent at Glentoran, as I said, it was an absolutely brilliant team, but it didn't really translate into league form. And I know it's obviously Linfield had a brilliant team as well, but even Corian were sort of edging ahead at Glentoran. And even in the years before you joined the team, it was like that. Why do you think that was?
I don't know why. I think Glentoran always had the best football teams. Always attractive to watch. Even when I was a kid and was growing up watching them myself, I used to go down to the matches. It was just that thing was missing. It got us over the line more so than happened with Linfield. Just kept grinding it out for some reason. I don't know what it is.
But then, obviously, that dominance in the Irish Cup sort of made up for it, as the song goes. If we don't win the league, the Irish Cup will do. Yeah. And McLean certainly did. Loved the Irish Cup. The one, the Irish Cup, your first 3 years, that made it four in a row.
Yeah. I think some supporters do like win the Irish Cup more so than the league. Not so much for the players though, but it's always a great day out for the supporters.
It's a super day out.
There's nothing like coming out at Windsor and looking up and seeing that stand filled.
There's just something about the Irish Cup in general, I suppose, for players too, perhaps getting your suit, or you know what I mean, the pre-match meal. I'm speaking to players on the podcast before, and they always talked about how, probably not in your day, maybe later on they stayed in the Park Avenue the night before.
That's right.
And things like that, you know, it was the big build up to it.
Yeah. Well, we used to just meet early in the Park Avenue, used to get the pre-match and then travel over. Obviously, a lot of supporters were in the Park Avenue meeting up as well, and it was good atmosphere before you got there. They used to give you a good send-off coming out of the Park Avenue on the Hollywood Road there, and away we went.
And those Irish Cup games, sort of in the late 80s, you were sort of trying to break into the team. You were making a lot of appearances, but not really nailing down a place. So you missed out on a few of the match day squads, but back in those days, you only had one sub.
That's right.
So, but what was that like then when they won the Cup? Do you still feel part of it? Because you played a big part.
Especially when you're at Glenmont, you always wanted to win the Cup, whether you're in the team or not. I didn't care whether I was in the team or not, to be honest with you. You know, I just wanted to win. And it was great when you won. And when you lost, it was terrible. So it was really shocking when you lost.
The one sub rule, that it was sort of, it's hard to think of now. You know, and the pitches were heavier back then, and the ball was probably heavier back then.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were relieved when they started bringing in, they give more opportunities when they brought in the different.
I think I started off with one. There was one sub, and then where I finished, I think it was two or three. Yeah. Ended up being on the bench, and I was probably on the bench more times than I was on the pitch, to be honest with you. But didn't care. But I think it's the whole upbringing of the football world. It's all changing now, isn't it? The pitches are like bowling greens. They've all got these different types of boots. I mean, these types of socks they're wearing now.
Yeah, I've seen that. Seen some of the lads, just for the podcast listeners, we're recording this up at Ashfield where the academy is based, and some of the lads coming out there, their cars, going under the pitch, and I'm looking, going, what's this gear they're wearing?
Yeah, all the cut-off socks, yeah. The things have these special socks that go into the groups, or boots, that gives them better grips on the boots. So, listen, if Ronaldo does it, Messi does it, these boys have to do it.
The 1988 Irish Cup final, that was a special one because it completed the double, and that was the last Glentoran team to obviously win the double. We haven't done it since. That season in general was quite special. You played a lot in that season.
Yeah, I got a wee break, luckily enough, to people's injuries and stuff like that there, and I got in and took my chance and done all right. Just put the effort in. I wasn't blessed with skill or technical ability, but I just put the effort what I could put in, and a hell of a place for most of the season that year.
In that 1988 season, obviously with it being the last time the Glens won a double, people look back in 2009 and they can't believe it's the last Glentoran team now to have won the league. At that time, I'm sure you didn't think that would be the last Glentoran team to win the double.
No, definitely not. It's crazy when you think about it, really. You know, hopefully we'll get there soon.
So many good players as well. And a player that everyone always talks about is Gary McCartney. And I had him on the podcast. Is he probably the best goal scorer you've played with?
Oh, there's no doubt. He scored some goals. His work rate was good too. You know, chasing back. And you remember his tackles from behind, getting up and so quick on the ball and away he went again. But there was always great goal scorers about them days. Blackie was one too. He was lethal with his 2 feet. Gary Hillis went in two with goals as well. So... No, Big McCartney's probably up there, you know. He won't be too far away from being the best about.
I mean, speaking of goal scorers, in 1991 then, I think it was Gary McCartney got injured, is that right?
I think he got Glasgow fever. That's the season where I played most of the games, sorry. Yeah. It wasn't the 88 ones. It was sub most of the 88 ones until the last game, sorry.
It was 88 you started to make your breakthrough. It was sort of that when people started sitting up and taking note that you started to come off the bench, started playing the odd game.
I think I was sub nearly every league game up until the Coleraine game. And Jacko played me in the last game up at Coleraine. Couldn't believe it. And we worked on the corners that night, or that Thursday night beforehand, and I put the corner in for nuts running to the near post, and then we got the goal from it. So.
And then it was in 1991, you played up front for a lot of that season, and Jacko was very complimentary of you. He's on record saying about how hard you'd worked through all your years being at the club, bided your time, and you got in, and you were outstanding up front. People have really good memories of you playing up front with Gary Hillis.
Yeah, I did play up front with Gary and Justy as well. I think Soupy was there as well, wasn't he?
Soupy, and then it was like yourself and Justy, Gary Hillis, and Nuts all scored.
And Doogie there at the time as well.
It was like 18, 20 goals each or something.
I think I had 19 or 18 or 19. And fair play to Jacko. I think it was 90, and Jacko wanted me to move on to Larn, and I didn't. I refused to go. I said, Jacko, I don't want to go. He says, no, but you're not going to get my team. And I said, well, I'll play for Glentoran Reserves before we move on to any other club. And thankfully I stayed. And for a bit of Jacko, he put me in. I did work hard. And I said, that's the least anybody could do is work hard on the football pitch. And anything more than that's a bonus.
And was there no sort of England go away? You know, players like nowadays, they really want to go and play football, which is fair enough. It's absolutely what's what it's all about. But you were at your boyhood club, I suppose.
No, honest to God, he brought me in pre-season on a Saturday morning, and I remembered clearly, and he told me Paul Malone's on his way up to talk to you. I said, well, I don't want to talk to him. He said, well, just do a decent thing and talk to him. I said, but I don't want to talk to him, I don't want to leave. And Paul came up and talked to Paul, and I said, Paul, I don't mean any disrespect to Lauren or any other club. I just want to stay at Glentoran. Should be playing for the reserves, I'm happy enough.
Would you say then that 91-92 season, because you bided your time, you took your opportunity, you played up front, you scored loads of goals, the fans loved you, and then against all odds the Glens went and won the league, because no one was expecting the Glens to win the league. It was a very young team at the time. I think Gary Smith broke into the team that year, Justin McBride obviously, there was loads of young players. Would that have been your favourite season at the Glens?
88 was good too, but that season was great. A lot of youngest boys got into the team, and we all worked our socks off and all worked for each other. We had great banter throughout that season. think won a few more trophies that season too, didn't
they? Yeah, I think there was loads of, the Glens were notorious for winning the League Cup, the County Antrim, yeah. Gold Cup, City Cup. You know, there was in that period of time, there was so many trophies won. There was, yeah, even in the year before this, the 7-Up season, Glens didn't win the league that year, but the Glen men fondly remember it. Because there was cup finals between the draw of the Blues and near enough every cup that season.
That's right, yeah. It's a great season too.
Yeah, that's the thing. People nowadays remember the league winning and their cup winning seasons, but the 7-Up season is something that all Glen men always talk about, and players always talk about. It's just that rivalry with Linfield. It's yeah, unmatched anywhere else.
Yes, yeah, there's no doubt. It's the biggest game in local football. You know, they can talk whatever they want to talk about, but Glen Thorn Linfield is the main one.
Winning the league then in 1992 meant that it set up this European fixture with Marseille, and you played in that game. There's a photo of you playing in that game that exists out there. That must have been an unbelievable experience, because the way football's structured now, it just would not happen.
No, it's a pity, and it's a pity now the way it is. That was a great, great occasion, and I remember it so clearly, coming into the ground, and the boy on Marseille was a burnout tapu.
Yeah.
He was eating one of our local sausage rolls right in the tunnel. It was so funny, a big man like him eating the sausage rolls. But it was a great experience. It wasn't a nice experience, but it was a great experience. Being on the pitch with so many good players, and it was just, I thought they had 15, 16 players on at one stage. Couldn't get near them. Saying that, I missed a sitter that night at home.
What about the away fixture? That must have been incredible, going out in front of those fans in that stadium at the time, and it must have just been something else.
Yeah, it was some great weather too, and on the stand seats, they had these wee Marseille hearts, wee white hearts. And what they were for, every time they attacked, the crowd threw them up in the air. So these white things were fanning the whole match all around the place up in the air. So it was just crazy. I think they went on to win it that year, I'm not sure.
They did. Yeah. And that's what I mean by, the Glens are never going to draw a team in Europe that's going to win. Because even they weren't anywhere near favourites. They've won, they'll go on and win it that year, as far as I'm aware. I think there was a strong Ajax team back then, and there was other teams as well. But yet they went on and won it, and there's no way. I mean, the strongest opposition probably in Irish League club has drawn in recent years. You look at Carabag, Linfield played Carabag, and they're never going to win.
Yeah,
they wouldn't even win the Conference League. So it's really unfortunate the way it's structured these days.
It's all
money. Yeah,
and Sky TV and money, or European or Eurosport now, isn't it?
Well, they play the TNT. They put the games on. Everything's all subscription, obviously. In true Glen Thorn fashion, you went on top of the world to absolute crisis, because obviously then the following season was the first time in Jacko's Glen Thorn career as player or manager that he didn't win a trophy, and it cost him his job.
Yeah.
What are your memories of that? And you must have been disappointed for him to go.
Yeah, Jacko was a great manager. You know, he was hard, he was ruthless, but to be honest, he was fair. You know, he was fair with you. And he was straight to the face with you. There was no hiding with him. Him and Big Tank McCulloch, you know, good combination there. But it's football, isn't it? You know, especially at Glen Thorn. Yeah. Managers could change it right and quick.
Yeah, that's it. That we were discussing before we came on, like, who'd be a football manager? It's just the most insecure job. But I mean, a manager as successful as Tommy Jackson, I think that most of the fans' anger back then was actually targeted towards the board of directors. I was reading an interview, I think it was with, it wasn't with Tommy Jackson, it was maybe with Strain, the next manager, and he said that every game, when he was in charge, there was banners demanding the board to be sacked.
I remember down at Lauren one day, and I wasn't playing, I was in the director's box. I remember a crowd of supporters trying to get in the director's box to get at our board. It was totally uncalled for, to be honest with you, when you think about it, you know, like, sick. Nobody's going out to make mistakes on purpose, or nobody's going out to play bad on purpose. You know, mistakes are being made, but they're not doing it on purpose. So it's just a pity why some people get on, the guards stuff they got there.
Yeah, I was reading the interview, it was Robert Strain. He says that him and Billy Caskey came in, and it's the worst decision he ever made in his life, because he took over at a really turbulent time when the fans were just protesting against the board, so he felt like his hands were tied.
Yeah.
And it was obviously that energy off the stands, when it is that toxic, it's bound to filter onto the pitcher, onto the player.
It does, it certainly does. You do hear things and you do see things, and unfortunately it does go onto the pitch. People say they try and keep it off the pitch, and managers try to take the blame themselves, shout at me instead of shouting at the players, but it does affect the players. I mean, Robert Strain's a great guy, loveliest guy you meet. Costco's just Costco, you know, he's like absolute star, and you know, things went wrong against them too.
How did you feel when they were coming in? Because obviously you knew them, and the Glenthorne always recruited from within.
Well, when I came back to United, Robert was a reserve team manager, and we had a great reserve team. So I had Brian Strain, Philip Major, Davy Mills, the late Davy Mills, God bless him. A real good bout of players there, and Robert was a great manager, you know, man to man, he was really, really good. Just unfortunately, when him and Costco got the job, it probably wasn't the right time for them. But when is the right time to take a Glenn's job, or when is the right time to turn a Glenn's job down? I don't think there's any right time to turn the Glenn's jobs down. So.
No, I think you're probably right. Then the next manager who came in after that was then Tommy Cassidy, which was a strange time in the league as well. It was the whole restructuring of the league. And I've spoken to a few players in this generation. Some have mixed reports on Tommy Cassidy. I think it was Gary Smith said that he just didn't get on with him at all, whereas John Devine found him okay.
Yeah.
How was your relationship with him?
I got on well with Tommy. Some good stories, some good crack. He was honest enough. He probably tried to bring a bit different style than what we were used to at Glenthorne. I think did he sign big Pete Bailey?
Yeah, I think he did sign Pete Bailey, yeah.
And a few odd boys, and they were tough, tough boys. And
I think that was in his last season he really signed Pete Bailey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But he always said he needed, that was the thing that stuck with him, he said he needed two more players.
That's right, I remember him saying that there. Big Pete was a great player for us, gave us that extra strength in there. Tommy won the Irish Cup.
He won the Irish Cup in 1996. Yeah. But it was obviously, it was the year, if you remember, they restructured the Irish League, so that your season was basically averaged out over two seasons, and the Glens finished sixth or something, but could have got relegated.
Yeah, jeez, that would have been a hard one to take from winning the Irish Cup previous to it.
And do you remember the game against Crusaders? Obviously, you scored in that game. Yeah, it was a big game.
I remember. I think it was Trevor got the penalty. It was the last few minutes too, wasn't it?
He scored in the last minute, aye.
Was it our Scotsman and that's famous? Was it McEwen and that's famous?
Not sure who the keeper was, but I remember yourself, Glenn Little, and Trevor Smith.
Yeah, I remember the crowd out there, some crowd.
Massive, big atmosphere. It was like a cup final. Yeah.
So as there normally is, like Glenn, man, I'll watch Seaview, bring some crowd there. So do.
I always preferred the sort of old setup with Seaview, I think, compared to what you get now. It was unbelievable. I remember even winning the league there in 2005. And it was just special.
Yeah.
But that season in particular, it felt like every game was a cup final going towards the end, even though, because Glenmen felt confident because we did have a decent team, you know what I mean? It wasn't like we were an actual relegation team.
It's getting the win still.
I know, exactly. But was it strange being in that sort of setup where you're mid-table?
I can't really remember why they ever went down that route.
They were trying to cut the team. I think it was 18 teams, wasn't there? And they were trying to cut them down.
Cut it down.
Yeah.
I think it probably needs to be increased itself now. I think it's
being 12. Do you think
12 is too little?
You think if you were to increase it to 14 or 16, it might.
I think 14 probably.
But do you not think it would dilute the quality? I suppose you wouldn't really. You might get a port down in there and
port it down. Maybe Institute.
Yeah.
You know, Ballyclare coming up, or one of the local teams, Dundalk and the Welders here.
Well, Dundalk, you know, they're in the news at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah.
They can't.
Unfortunately, because they've done some work that place.
I know, it's really disappointing. It is. I think they need to look at that, really.
Yeah.
It is disappointing for Dundalk. It's disappointing for the league. And for East Belfast, too.
But how are they allowed to play Irish Cup games, but can't play Irish League games?
I know. It is. It's a bizarre setup. And I understand them not wanting the ground share, because they make so much money through their bar takings and their, you know what I mean? Like that, why would you take away, you have to pay someone to go play? What would be the purpose? They would really struggle to advance.
Yeah, I suppose that's a problem there for them as well. But no, they've done an awful lot of work, and it's a great club and great people around it too.
We obviously mentioned there that season, the 96, and we mentioned Glenn Little. What was he like for you as a player and as a person? I suppose he was a larger than life.
I had to give him a bit of stick because I played right back at the time behind him, and he was never wanted to work back and help me out. I was like getting slaughtered every match. But no, what a player Glenn was, you know. I think sometimes we didn't know what he was doing. I don't know where he knows what he was doing sometimes, but when he got on them runs with that ball, he was frightening, you know. Really, really good. And a good lad too with it, you know.
Speaks so highly of his time with Glenn Thorne.
Yeah.
I interviewed him when he was at Wilston, and he just spoke so highly about his time at the Glens. He says if he could go back and relive, because he was only 19.
Yeah.
Such a young age to be living over here.
I think, I might be wrong, I think he went and loaned to Derry.
He was at Derry before he joined us.
Robert Strain seen him playing up there. I think it was Strainer got him down to us somewhere. Vaguely remember that there. That's what happened.
Everyone will look back in their own era, sort of a misty eyes, and it's the same with fans. Fans look back and go, "That's my era. They were the better players." But if you look back on the players you played with, and a lot of people, I've heard people say that you would get into the current Glenthorne midfield. And
they're not that bad yet.
and I've heard that about a lot of players. How do you compare? So obviously now it's all full. It's sort of we're full time, but the quality now compared to back then, you see it close.
I think it's different all over. As I said earlier on, it's a change in the world. It's a change of people's livelihood, what to do outside of football, what to do inside of football. I think we played. I don't think there was many gyms about. We were doing 2 nights a week training, and you very seldom done your other third or fourth night yourself. I think nowadays the part-time clubs, like when I was at Glenavon, they were doing the 2 nights. The boys there were going to the gym the Monday and the Wednesday, and maybe the Friday morning themselves. So they were still getting 5 sessions in. Yes, we're full-time, and Phil and Larner are all full-time, and they're training every day. But I think years ago there was no gyms about, so everybody just got on with it. So I think it's, I'm not saying people look after their bodies better nowadays, but they're going to the gym more often probably, or doing more training. But standard, is the standard get better? That's a hard one to say. So it is. I'm going to go for the old days.
Yeah.
It was better.
Everyone always does, don't they? That's the thing. It's even with myself too. I look at all the players that I sort of grew up watching play for Glenthorne, and I always think they're absolutely brilliant. Like Tim McCann was absolutely brilliant. Darren Lockhart, absolutely brilliant. And I suppose it's really difficult to compare because you can't put them against each other.
I think coaches nowadays are now more tactical than they were years ago. I mean, for us, we always used to play 4-4-2. If you remember when I broke into the Glens team and Jolly Jamison, get the ball to Jolly Jamison, or wee Krieger on the left, and or Suki on the left, and they got the byline, and two centre forwards were getting into the box, and midfielders were coming in. That's where we're getting goals. And then Tim was probably one of our last proper right wingers, probably.
Yeah, Stephen Carson.
Carson played on the left a bit, didn't he?
He played, wingers in general. You know what I mean? So Stephen Carson was probably the closest thing you get to Tim McCann since then. Since now you don't really have wingers. Everyone's playing as a front forward, basically.
Yeah, they're swapping and changing and they're moving about. So yes, it's all changed now.
It's really, really difficult question to answer. I'm just curious to see, because I'm yet to find anyone to say that. It's the only person I've ever heard say is Arsene Wenger. I read his book and he said that football now is so much better than what it was when he was managing Arsenal in the 90s, 2000s.
Well, I'm sure if you asked somebody from Larne the same question, they'd probably say their team nowadays is better than their old team.
Yeah, definitely.
But they had some good players years ago too in their team. So late Davy Sloan and stuff like that there. Big Paul Carlin, they were hard players. Tom Sloan as well, Brian McLachlan, they had good teams then.
We played them in Irish Cup final.
That was a 3-0.
I think we played them in one of the Irish Cup finals.
I think it could be right.
Yeah.
It could be right there.
You retired when you were only 30 because you broke your leg against Cliftonville. Was a broken leg, wasn't it?
Yeah, a compound, the bone came up.
Was that a tough call? Do you think if it was now, you'd probably be able to recover and play on?
I don't know, it was hard. You know, it was a bad break, and I've still got pins and nails in my leg since it. I tried to get back 2 or 3 times, maybe more, but I just kept getting infected in my leg. And it was time, I was 33 at the time. I couldn't run for a couple of years, really, without a limp. And I was 33 out of 10, and I was still struggling. My knee was sore, shin was sore. And I just thought, you know, I don't want to end up being bad further down the line. So just called it quits then.
288 appearances and 41 goals. You won 10 medals, and it was all for your boyhood club. You must be really, really proud of that.
Well, I am, yeah. I'm glad it was the only club I ever played for, too. So it was the only club I ever wanted to play for. 288 appearances, I was probably looking to get some of them, too, because I was playing with some great, great players. It was hard to get into the team in. Delighted to have that many, and the goals as well. Yeah, I'm happy with that. So,
of course, it wasn't the last time you'd be at the Oval. You made a return in 2006 as assistant manager with your big mate, Windy. It's mad that when I was researching, I had no idea you went, I knew you were really close friends, I didn't know you went that far back as your boys' club, basically.
Yeah.
So you just go a long way back. And you just came in when Roy Coyle had just departed, his big boots to fill. Looking back on it, and I know we said earlier on it, talking off air, and I've said this on the podcast a few times, the players who played during that time, we finished second, and we'd made the Irish Cup final the year before, won the League Cup, so qualified for Europe, but it wasn't really enough to save the job of yourself on Monday.
Crazy situation you think about. This was talked earlier on, you know, that Linfield team was a great Linfield, one of the greatest Linfield teams I've seen. Say their strike force was spiking. Peter Thompson up front, you got 100 goals that year. We done okay, run them close in this Irish Cup final. I think that's the match Nicky done his bone in the back of his neck.
Yeah.
Run them close in the league. We were top of the league for a brave bit. We missed Darren Ackard going out early December, I think he went out. Really missed him because he was a strong, strong player for us. And then win the League Cup, I think it was December as well, against Clevenville. So I think we done all right. When you're considering,
You signed some great players. I really liked Kyle Neal as a player. I thought he was really good for Glens.
Well, that was one of Wendy's. Wendy obviously knew Kyler well. He knows Hamilton, knew Hank Gary as well. And Kyler was a great, great, strong, strong player. Great to have on your team. Great delivery of set pieces. Went in with a few goals, but great, great defender as well.
I think Gary Hamilton, well, just an absolute phenomenon. He was absolutely brilliant. Scored 36 goals that season. It was special player.
Gary's some player. One of the most skillful players probably in the league I've ever seen. In my eyes anyway, and in my time. Not only could he score top ends, but he scored some great individual goals. And, you know, he was a great, great player.
Scored a hat-trick one day at Newry in 12 minutes. A 12-minute hat-trick. He was absolutely phenomenal. Imagine what he did if he didn't smoke Rigo Filter.
Maybe worse.
I remember. Do you remember when he went away? It was after you left. It was under Big Mac. Went away to Israel and he smoked in the pitch.
Well, I can't remember.
And it ended up all over the Israeli media because there was a player smoking the pitch. He used to have a laugh and a joke about it. To be fair, like he was absolutely fantastic and a big character.
I remember the first match he signed. It was a pre-season match at the Oval. I'm allowed to say this here, aren't I?
Yeah.
And we're out warming up. And I think Tom Dick came down, said to Wendy, he said, Wendy, you tell him to stop pacing on the sign over there. He's pacing some sponsor's sign. I don't think he meant any harm in it. Like, he just needed to go to the toilet.
I've seen it loads of times. I've seen it with opposition keepers at the Oval and stuff. You know what I mean? You gotta go. I remember, was it Owen Bradley? He did it for Corian and he got caught on TV. Oh, absolute nightmare. Like, you have to realise it's on TV. But then, obviously, so you left the Oval and you had a spell at Glenavon. I assume you enjoyed that spell at Glenavon. Very, very successful spell at Glenavon with the two Irish Cups, and they were challenging up the top of the table.
Yep, I went to Glenavon and I went down to take the reserves and help out with the higher age groups in the academy as well. And really loved it. Great club. Great directors on it. The chairman, Big Adrian. The other boys all worked together, all done their bit for the club. You always seen them in the Saturdays, they were out doing, they're working their socks off, and they got the success they deserved with the hard work with the Irish Cups. Great days out, great support. Some of the Irish Cups have won, they probably weren't expecting to win, but they done it. So it is. I think did we beat Crusaders in the semi-final, and then I think Big Kevin scored four. Kevin Bradford was
right.
The fourth.
He was on fire.
And then beat Linfield in the final.
Final, yeah. That was Corey in the second one.
I think Corey was the first one. Corey was the first one. The Kyler scored that one.
I did actually, because I had him on the podcast. He was talking about that. Was it quite late on?
I think
because he was talking about that, yeah. But then obviously you made your return to the Oval here as head of player development once the takeover went through.
Yeah, the following year, obviously Wendy left with when it first happened, and I didn't want to leave Gary on his own, so I stayed for a bit, and I told him I'm going to go when I told him. It was probably the following season I came, and I've enjoyed it ever since, you know.
Were you surprised when Wendy came to you and go, look, we've got this fella that's going to invest in Glentoran? I mean, I was surprised. I thought it was a wind-up.
I know that's what you're thinking, is a wind-up with people saying there's some millionaire going to put money into the club and stuff like that there. But yeah, I was surprised, and I'm glad he did it, and hopefully he keeps continuing doing it for us.
The role as player development then, as a head of player development, how's things sort of changed for, so looking at it from when you were coming through as a player to how these young players are coming through, you get to see it firsthand. Is there a lot more for them now?
Of course there is. When we were kids, we never trained during the week until we were 15 or 16 when I came to Glens. We trained on a Tuesday and Thursday, but our club team, Cornell, we didn't train. We only played in school matches and played in the Saturday for the boys club as well. So now the kids have got, they've got training nearly every day, especially here at the Glentoran Ashfield Academy, school academy. We've probably got 18 or 20 boys here who are training full time in the academy, which is great for them, and of course getting their education as well. So they're training during the day here. They train on Monday night, or else play on Monday night for the reserves. They'll train on a Wednesday night also, with the 18s and reserves and 16s, and then the 18s will play on a Friday, and the 16s will play on a Saturday morning. So the amount of football kids are getting nowadays all over the country, it's phenomenal. Like these 3G pitches flying up everywhere, floodlight pitches everywhere. We never used to have them years ago, and it can only make the football better for Northern Ireland, I think, in the long run. Not just for Glentoran, but all the clubs throughout the country, boys clubs and all. It'll hopefully make the football better in years to come.
And that makes it such an attractive proposition for young people that they can come to Glentoran and get their education. It's equivalent, I think they're getting the equivalent of 3A levels. You're coming and playing on a full, it's basically like being at a full-time football club, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like the boys in England. Boys from here and boys have left here and been lucky enough to get apprenticeships over the last couple of years over in England and Scotland. And they do the same sort of thing with their schoolwork as well during the day, which is very, very important. I mean, for me, the schoolwork comes first and then the football at this age. But it's all running well, and I think every club in the league nearly now have one of these academies. So we have to keep boosting ours and kicking on with it.
I know someone who recently had a tour of the facilities at Lorne. Their academy set up and the sort of direction that they're headed, and they couldn't believe the facilities that they were seeing down there. They've obviously had a huge amount of investment from someone who has money to burn, quite frankly. Like it's like he's not looking to return on his investment.
Yeah.
Is there a plan for something similar for Glentoran should the stadium money come in? Would there be something, would you like to see head in that direction?
Yeah, definitely would like to see something like that coming in with us, with a new stadium money coming through. Hopefully it does come through. We can get our ground updated. We can get something close by that could update for the academy, the boys to play with and get taught with. So yeah, hopefully it'll all fall into place someday, hopefully in the near future.
But even looking at the setup now, like I went to school here at Ashfield 14 years ago, I was last here, and it didn't look like this. It's pretty phenomenal what they've got here even now, that the money's been put in here, the facilities, the new pitch is put out there. I remember I was at school when that pitch was first put on, like rolled out, and it was a nightmare, but now it looks in tip-top shape.
It's a nice place up here. As you look around the wall here, you can see we are in Whitemont. He's probably one of the first ones that came through here, through the academy, into our first team. And hopefully we can get a few more over the next couple of years.
There's always been talk about sort of a centre of excellence, an IFA centre of excellence. Has there been any sort of discussion about the possibility of Glentoran incorporating that centre of excellence? I know that there's land there, King George, the council own it. The IFA are looking for a space, we're looking for a stadium. Has there been a discussion that that could be a possibility?
I don't know about joining up with the IFA with that. There's been no discussion really with us with that. Funny enough, today I was down to Manchester at the plant floor, and Michael O'Neill was walking around with the grass pitches with Andy Waterworth, so maybe they have earmarked down there, which they previously did before the Welders put their own stuff in there. But Michael O'Neill was the first manager. That's when he was wanting his base down there. So maybe they're trying to do that now down there themselves. But as you say, the King George pitch, wouldn't that be a great facility for Glentoran to have as an academy there, next door to the Theatre of Dreams?
It would be absolutely amazing. I've noticed they've put nets up there.
I've seen that a few weeks ago.
I haven't seen that in a very long time. But it just seems like it's basically a space for dog walkers. And I just think that Glentoran could make such an amazing use out of that their facility if the government or the council, even, because I know the council have put money in the clubs in Northern Ireland, not necessarily Belfast Council, but look at Antrim Council let Larne get Inver Park for very cheap. Other councils are putting money at Cordy and Ballymena. So it would be great if we could work alongside a council to get a facility there.
No, it definitely wouldn't. You know, fair play to them as well for getting that, the work done to the grounds. Hopefully our council and government do start releasing the money here soon for us to try and update our facilities.
We've seen Reece Walsh move across the water recently, and I know that there's one other making a similar sort of move soon. And Linfield have received big money for young players in recent years. Is that the business model at Glentoran? Is that a feasible business model to get them that move and get the fees in?
I don't. It's not our aim to get the player. I want the players to stay here. Wee Reece broke my heart, I'll tell you. I was going to dig him.
He's a smashing player.
A great kid. And you know, it's hard for kids to turn chances down like that when clubs like that come in. For me, I'd prefer them to stay like Tarry did. I know Tarry came up to Dungannon, but he came to us the last season there. You know, if he stayed here for a couple of seasons, get a lot of senior games under their belt, and then they'll bypass the academy football over there. But it's hard for a kid to turn it down when the opportunity comes and the team wants to sign them. Financially, I don't think it's great. As I previously said in our reporter there not so long ago, it's not great money our clubs get over here compared to what our European clubs get. You know, I know of a Croatian club has just sold two players, the two kids, the team in Germany, for £4 million each. So I don't believe their players are so much, much higher than our players at that age. So why are we getting so little? Honestly.
Yeah, I've always been a big advocate of players staying here and getting 100 games under their belt and then moving on, because if you look at the players who have done the best, like Mark Sykes, players like that, or even Stuart Dallas, Gavin White, like all these young players that came, played 100 games. Even Terry was playing right wing back there before he was got his injury. He was flying.
Doing so well.
And I think it's because they get that baptism of fire in a men's league here.
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt. But how do you tell a kid?
I know. This is it.
I tried to tell Reece and his dad. It didn't work. I'll keep trying until the next one's gone. But we've done well over the last lot of years. Some kids flying away. There's wee Fra Turley's at Celtic, doing really, really well. Brendy Hamill in Aberdeen, doing really, really well. And of course, Big Mason at Rangers. Reece is the same age group as the M boys. He's went a year later. He was back home last week. I don't know why you've seen him, but he's starting to fill out a wee bit more. You can see it. He's been working on himself.
See, I'm glad to hear that you sort of have that attitude, that you try and convince the players to stay here, because I was always worried that sort of clubs just can't wait to sort of cash in, get them off the books. I want to see Glentoran have these young players have a route to first team football.
Yeah. You know, 100%. And, you know, that's my aim, for them to play for Glentoran. So that's the highest I can play for.
Recently, we've seen the forming of the Elite Youth League involving Glentoran, Cliftonville, Linfield and Crusaders. Is it Crusaders the third team?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was it's an invitational league. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it was just something that we're trying to put forward for next season or whatever. We just had a meeting to see what best plans for us, for our best kids, all the age groups, what we can do to better the league, what we can do to better our kids, our players, and what we can do to better our club. And the rest of the boys are thinking the same way. I think it's in early stages of where it's going to go, but we probably need to try and get it sorted out as soon as possible.
Do you think it put any noses out of joint?
I don't know who's going to be invited into this league or what way it's going to put the invitations going to go out. We're still working. Everybody seems to be working on that there. Just have to wait and see what happens.
So just finally, ones to watch. You can for Glenmen, who can we see maybe making some first team? Obviously, we see Warren.
I don't like putting names up.
We see Warren give a lot of the young players in pre-season and stuff, or in the cup games, mostly pre-season, like Tim's son.
Yeah.
And then we've seen Casey Smith out on loan at Dundella. Do you think that's the best route? Do you think we're more likely to look at the players out on loan and they're more likely to come back a bit like Johnny Russell?
Hopefully. Well, you look at young George as well. You know, George has been in the squad regular, and he's earned merit. And George is our youngest goal scorer ever.
Yeah.
15 years of age. And, you know, people are saying, I'm not saying people are saying, but they are coming to me and saying, is wee George in the first team squad? And I've seen him play in the 16s and I've seen him play in the 18s, but me promoting him in the age groups. And as soon as I seen him, I put him in the reserves down at Larne. He was lethal, absolutely lethal. So he was against senior boys he was playing against, and he played against Crusaders, against senior boys who's won league titles for Crusaders and maybe Linfield as well. And he tormented them. So he's there, Mert. So he is. And I'd love him to stay. Just say, I think he's like a McCartney type of player. He's quick, he's lethal in the finishing, he's aggressive too. But obviously, he'll probably move on too at the end of the season to cross the water, which would be a big loss. The rest of the players, I'm not going to name names,
no.
But there is quite a few.
Yeah.
There's quite a few coming through, which is good. Again, they'll probably be attracting across the water clubs, which they are doing at the minute, and they've been back and forward to several clubs on trial. But my aim is to try to persuade them to stay Brickley and Thorn.
Super. Andy, I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been eye-opening speaking about the academy, because I don't think it gets enough sort of publicity. I think there's a lot of good work going on, and especially when there's so much negativity going on at the minute, maybe around the first team, it's really nice to have a conversation about all the good stuff that's happening.
Yeah, it's good. And fair to say too, another boy we've brought in there the last couple of months, is why you noticed them out there training, Willie Garrett's back.
Oh, is Willie back? I had Willie on the podcast, and he says that he was asked to come and help out.
He's been back now a few months. Brilliant. And he's been absolutely super with the kids.
Super.
To have a boy like him about the club with the kids, defensively especially, it's been super, and it's really, really good. And I just wish some more old players would come back and get involved with us.
No, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, Andy. Brilliant. Thanks very much, mate.
Cheers,
it's been
Bobby.
A pleasure.
Thank you, mate.
So there we go. It is another episode of the Shout at the Oval podcast, and it was great to be back behind the mic and meeting Andy. Really nice setting to record the podcast too. We're just sat in the changing rooms, and you could hear people who were coming in and out, but it was just more of a natural setting than, say, in the club where it's all very much just us. It was just something a bit different, and it was great to go down and, as I say, see everything that's going on there, and brilliant to see Willie Garrett involved as well. I seen him after we finished recording. I went out and he was just coming off the pitch, so brilliant to see that. Hopefully there will be more former players involved, just like Andy said. Also interesting to speak to Andy about, you know, the Glens were trying to get the likes of King George, but they couldn't get it. The local residents were objecting. Hopefully something in the future can come of that. And as I say, living the dream to be able to play as many times for Glentoran and to win so many medals with so many great players as well. So it was great. It was my first time ever meeting him, and he was just an absolute gent. So thanks very much to Andy for accommodating me. So coming up over the next few weeks, there will be a podcast next week, even though there isn't actually, as you know, I do these podcasts and then I usually write in the Gazette a preview of the podcast. But there isn't actually a Gazette next week for the semi-final, but I am going to do a semi-final preview, a special podcast with a special guest, which I will reveal over the weekend. So really looking forward to that. I'm going to make up for lost time and try and get a couple of podcasts out here between now and the end of the season, because there's really not that much time left. And I know that even before I took a break, it's been a bit inconsistent this season for one reason or another, but plans are already underway for next season. And I purchased a camera there whilst I was off, getting the grips of that, going to start releasing the podcast, I think, and maybe start next season releasing them on YouTube, hopefully. So that's something else to look forward to. But yes, thanks very much for tuning in once again, and I will speak to you very, very soon.